one, two, three. One, two, three. Yes, one, two, three. This is what I do before each Broadway show. So they provide all these people for you when you have a, well, you're on Broadway. That's where I was. I was on Broadway, made my Broadway debut in my 60s. And they, so they, you know, they provide you with security. They give you a driver, picks you up at your apartment, make sure you're there on time. You get your dressing room. The dressing room has a nice, comfortable couch or cot where you can take a little nap before you go out on stage. All these little perks. But one is the voice instructor. And I said, well, what do I need a voice instructor for? I'm not doing a musical. No. You're going to do 100 shows. And the goal is to not miss a single night. So how do you do 100 shows in a row and still have a voice after the 20th show? So I had this wonderful individual who taught me a few tricks. He said the most important thing you can do to strengthen your voice, preserve it, is to do what we as humans kind of, I don't know, I guess naturally do when we're in the shower. You just sing. You know, it's the safe space for all of us to sing because nobody can hear us, basically. And he said the best thing you can do is just sing for 10 minutes in the shower. I said, well, what do I sing? Whatever you want to sing, whatever comes in your head. So I did that. I did that every morning. And I think I'm probably prone to sing in the shower anyways, but I would just start singing, you know, doe, a deer, a female deer, ray, a drop of golden sun. Yeah, so that's my Broadway intonation. Me, a name, I call myself. Far, a long, long way to run. And it seemed to work because I never lost my voice. I never missed a single one of the 100 shows that I did in this limited run at the Belasco Theater. What was it? West 44th Street between Broadway and 6th Avenue. It was a great experience. I had a lot of fun and I didn't have to cancel a single show. My last night on the way home, the driver said to me, wow, this has been a great run. I think you might be the only person I've driven here in 20 some years that never took a night off, never missed a show, didn't get sick. I said, really? Wow. Did I make a mistake? Maybe I should have taken a break. But I don't know. I had such a blast doing it. The crowds were great. I made up things that we would just go do with the audience. I tell them at the end of the show here, I've got 4 double-decker buses sitting out on the street. Anybody wants to go over to Trump Tower with me? You're welcome. Come. Other nights, I would just make a deal with some of the food carts on the street. Say, hey, you know, the hot dog cart, can you be here like when my show is getting out? I want to give everybody who's come to the show a free hot dog. And I get in the cart with them and help make the hot dogs. And people come out. Everybody got a free hot dog. I got to talk to the audience in that way. It's different. Called up Ben and Jerry's. I say, hey, can you bring an ice cream cart over? Geez, we did that 3 or 4 nights, I think, during the 100-day run. I got to serve them up. It's a lot of fun. It's a great experience. I can't wait to do it again, actually. But I just got a bunch of little things I want to talk to you about. This won't be long. I'm still on strike. Not from the podcast, not from my Substack, but I'm a member of the Writers Guild. I'm a member of the Screen Actors Guild, SAG. I'm a member of the Directors Guild, but the Directors Guild is not on strike. So I'm on a double strike from working on any film or television work, essentially. For whatever reason, there's an exemption right now. If you are writing or acting in commercials, that's allowed. If you're on a soap opera, that's allowed. If you do reality TV, that's allowed. If you're in the news department and you're doing news or nonfiction that's for the news department, that's allowed. But everything else is not. And vast, vast majority of the members, all of us in both unions, voted in favor of the strike. You know, just the chatter I'm hearing is that it's not going to be over for some time. So the studios and the networks are, I would assume, losing a lot of money. Writers and actors are not being paid. Now, of course, you know, the top actors, they're, don't worry about them. They'd be the first to tell you they're all in support of the strike, but they, you know, they make millions of dollars per movie or TV series or whatever. But it's for everybody else. You know, there's so much writing that goes on in TV and in film. And of course, there's all kinds of actors. Not just the big stars, but people that have just a few lines. Or they're in a TV drama and they're on a one episode and they're there for only one day of filming. So the unions are just trying to create a balance here between the streamers and the old school studios and TV networks so that there's just some equity here and so that they're covered. You know, these, they're really guilds. They're not really the kind of union I grew up with. My family being UAW members, United Auto Workers. You know, if you're in the Screen Actors Guild or the Writers Guild, the Directors Guild, they all have different rules and different ways they calculate when you're covered by the health insurance and when you're not, what you get a pension for, what you don't get a pension for. When I was growing up with the Auto Workers Union, it was just, you're an auto worker and that's it. You're in the union. And you stay in the union. And my father lived to almost 93 years old. He was able to retire after 30 years and live the next 40 years of his life with his union pension and his union health insurance. They took care of all their workers. And the guilds, the actors and the writers, directors, everybody, they're all trying to do the same thing. So right now, I'd say it doesn't look very good. I think a lot of the sense is within the unions, nobody's going to have a job for the rest of this year. So that's not good news. It's not good news for us. It's not good news for you. You're probably missing some of your favorite shows on TV. Some of the networks banked a number of episodes or new series or whatever they're trying to get by with right now. But, you know, they're going to run out of the good stuff pretty soon. You're not going to have fall TV shows to watch. So that's the update on the strikes. Speaking of auto workers, the UAW begins their negotiations for new contracts with General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, which is called something else now. I don't even understand what the name means. It's like Spectrum or Verizon, where I don't know what those mean, but at least I know Spectrum and Verizon. I don't know the new name for Chrysler, Stellantis, something like that. But I want to take a minute here to thank my underwriters for today's episode. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to just quickly go over a bunch of things with you regarding what's happening in Maui and what happened in Ohio this week. First up is Shopify. A lot of you have heard me talk about Shopify over these couple of years. They're a longtime supporter of Rumble with Michael Moore. Shopify, of course, as you know, is the commerce platform that has revolutionized the business of millions of people from over 170 countries around the world. Whether you're an artist looking to sell your work online out of your garage or your studio, or maybe you're looking to open up a brick and mortar banned bookshop in your small town, you know, whatever your idea is, Shopify's the one tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. They make it as easy and as intuitive as possible. And no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify can adapt, giving you everything you need to take your shop to that next level. Plus, and this is my favorite part, Shopify gives you access to award-winning help to support you and help you succeed every step of the way. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/rumble. And make sure you put Rumble all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/rumble
to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.com/rumble, all lowercase, R-U-M-B-L-E, Shopify.com/rumble. And also on this podcast, we have another underwriter, and a huge thank you to them, another longtime Rumble supporter, and that is Moink. From small family farms to your dining table, Moink gives you access to the freshest, sustainably sourced meat and fish, all while supporting American family farms. Moink is a meat subscription service that delivers grass-fed beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon straight to your door. I'm telling you, my friends, you can taste the difference, and you have complete control over what's delivered in every box, whatever you're in the mood for, whether it's ribeyes or chicken breasts, pork chops, salmon fillets, and much more. And the best part, it feels good knowing that you're helping family farms stay financially independent too. So keep American farming going by signing up at moinkbox.com/rumble. And right now, listeners of my podcast get free ground beef for a year. That's 1 year of the best ground beef that you'll ever taste, but it's just for a limited time. So it's spelled Moink, M-O-I-N-K box, moinkbox.com/rumble, moinkbox.com/rumble. And thank you, Moink, for supporting this podcast and supporting my voice. Okay. On to the few things here I wanted to discuss today.
Let's start with Maui. It's so sad to see what's going on. And it right away, you're starting to think this has been going on now for days and days. And where is the cavalry? Where is the aid? Where are the ships heading from the West Coast to Hawaii to help them? What is going on? Look, I'm in the dark as much as you are about this. I watch TV and read the newspaper, but something doesn't seem right. Seems like a huge screw up from the beginning in terms of no sirens going off, no alerts going out to people, everybody trapped. As I'm recording this, there's over 100 now that have been killed, and there's close to 1,000 people missing. Now, granted, I'm sure the majority of them are missing because, well, people can't find family and friends and loved ones because the cell towers are out, the electricity's out. It's impossible to communicate and find anybody. And so people are living in this horrific panic day after day after day. And I just really feel for everybody out there in Maui. The reasons for this, I've started to do some reading about this. And decisions that have been made, environmental decisions that have been made. Again, I'm sorry I keep hounding on this, but where are our environmental leaders? Where are the environmentalists of old? You know, the hardcore fight for the planet, save the whales. You know, they're now getting backing from hedge funds and corporate America and Wall Street, and everybody's green. Oh, look how green we are. You know, and if you just dig a little bit into this, and, you know, I've talked about this before, and you've read things I've written, and hopefully you saw Jeff Gibbs's film that I executive produced called Planet of the Humans. If you haven't watched this film, we have really screwed up on so many levels. What an awful summer this has been for this planet. And so much time has been lost. We're fighting fights that should have been fought and won 50 or 60 years ago. And yet we're still trying to get the same things. Can somebody get some more solar panels? Put up some more windmills? We're so far beyond that in terms of us, the planet, being saved. Way beyond that. And yet every politician now, at least every, you know, Democratic politician, but even some of the Republicans have figured out, oh yeah, if I look green, if I sound green, I support green, that's what the people want. Of course, it's what the people want. The vast majority of Americans want stronger environmental laws. They want us to be moving forward to stop the onslaught that we're right in the middle of. the Paris Accords. You know, we wanted to get this stuff fixed by 2050. 2050, it's 2023, and we're already in collapse. And yet you still have our environmental leaders out there as they're now like paid spokespeople for various industries that are trying to make money off the so-called green technology. And you see some of the largest investors in this green technology are the oil and gas companies. I mean, because they know their time is up. Eventually, they ask fossil fuels. The reason why they're called fossil fuels is they're from fossils from long ago. And we can only drain so much of the energy we need from that. We've known that for a long time. The oil and gas companies have known that. And so they try to get on the bandwagon. They try to get the federal money or the federal tax breaks or carbon offsets, all this crap that is not going to save us. And smart people know this. Great environmental writers and researchers, investigative reporters have been telling us now these things for years. And for some reason, we're not listening to them, or we're getting distracted by the things that are, yes, they're good things to do. We should all do them, but we should have done them in the 1970s, not the 2020s. And Maui, oh my God. Apparently the fire chief for Maui wasn't there on the day this started, and the day after, the head of their emergency, whatever that state office, every state has an emergency manager, and not there for some reason. A lot of questions are being asked. A lot of people in Maui are very upset, and they were left to die. And the rescue response from the rest of us, the Americans, you know, they're Americans too, you know. And they're like, why are we being treated like Puerto Rico? Oh, wait a minute. The Puerto Ricans are Americans too. Yeah, but they're not a state, right? Hawaii is a state. But this is all part of the bullshit, because you can look at any place in America that needs help and the help doesn't arrive. I've only been to Maui once. Wow, beautiful place, wonderful people. But it is a very, it's not what you think it is. This island, and I can't speak for the other Hawaiian islands because I haven't, I've been to Oahu, that's it. But Maui, there's like, I don't know. I mean, it seemed like there were like two or three highways that were paved. And I was there in, what was that, 2013? I mean, it was mostly dirt roads, dirt paths. It's jungle. It's mountains. I mean, real jungle, real jungles, real mountains. And driving on this mountain road, which was really just going around in circles with the car kind of almost hanging off the edge. I guess they're probably used to driving if you live there. But as someone not from there, it was pretty scary, frankly. But it was, you know, it was a wonderful time. And again, like I said, the people, the food, everything is wonderful. But I could see how there's like, in terms of ingress and egress, in and out, there's not a lot of choices. If you're trying to run from a fire, watching people jump into the ocean to so that they wouldn't catch on fire, wow. And apparently nobody in charge thought this out. People have been taking boats from the other islands in the Hawaiian islands, you know, just grabbing boats and volunteers and food and water and just trying to make their way to Maui to help them out. People in Maui were saying tonight that the help from the government has been next to nothing. But the volunteers that have come from other parts of the state, they're very grateful. But they have literally lost everything. I mean, whole areas, villages, towns are just in ashes. They're going to find a lot more than 100 dead people. That's what they're saying. The bodies are charred. The bodies themselves have turned to ash. It's the worst wildfire disaster in the last 100 years for all 50 states in this country. And again, everything just seems very slow to move. No sense of urgency. Nobody in charge. Nobody had a plan. Wow. Well, you know, there's various places you can go online. Just, you know, type in help for Maui. And if you can help, please do. But I think we should also let our elected representatives know that we who don't live in Hawaii, expect massive help immediately, right now. Not another day to be wasted. Won't take much of our time to make a phone call or two, to drop an email to an elected representative in Congress and demand that this receive immediate attention. As someone from a city in Michigan where the governor allowed the water to be poisoned and did nothing about it for a very long time. Help didn't come for a long time, and then when the help came, it wasn't enough, and it still isn't enough, and people still are not drinking the water in Flint. So I've seen what this country will allow to have happen to an important city, a city where the American car was born, the hometown of General Motors, where the middle class was created thanks to the unions fighting and creating unions before they didn't even exist, so that people would be paid a decent wage, where they would have job security, where they would have health care, all of that thanks to the unions. And then everybody followed along after Flint in the 1930s, after our strike was successful. Hundreds of strikes across the whole country over the next few years to unionize, to get a fair shake. But when Flint was poisoned, I know everybody felt bad. I know a lot of people donated tons of bottles of water, which doesn't fix the situation. The average American uses 80 gallons of water a day for all the reasons we use water. And there's no amount of plastic water bottles could be shipped to Flint so that people could do their laundry or take a shower or take care of their dogs and cats and everything else that uses water. So I know in a way what the people of Maui are feeling like right now. And I'm sure they're hoping that the cavalry is coming. But, well, we'll see. That's why all the rest of us have a responsibility to demand action now and to give what we can to those agencies that will really get the money and the help through to the people there. Just a few other things here that I want to talk to you about. I know this is kind of a sad way to start things here today, but we did get some good news from Ohio this week. Very rare for a Michigander to say there's good news from Ohio. but last Tuesday, the Republicans in Ohio were trying to rig the vote for this November's election, because on the ballot in November, there is a ballot proposal to make abortion legal. And they're going to put it in the Ohio state constitution. And this freaked all the crazies out, all the religious fanatics who believe a fertilized egg is a human being.
And so they wanted to change the rules before the November election so that when the majority of Ohioans vote to make abortion legal, which is what they're going to do, every poll shows that upwards to close to 60% of people in Ohio want abortion legal and in the state constitution. So that appears that's what's going to happen in November. So to prevent that from happening, they wanted to pass a new law by setting up a special election in the middle of the summer in August. This law was going to, if it passed last week, was going to require that nothing could get into the state constitution unless it had 60% of the people voting for it. And the turnout last week was about as large as it is in the midterm election, in the off-year election, and like it was last year in 2022. That many people showed up for a off-year election for a special ballot proposal. The polls were packed. And the result? The right-wingers were sent packing. The majority of people in Ohio voted 57% to stop them from saying that the new majority, in order to put something in the Constitution, is 60% of the votes instead of 50. That lost. It's going to stay 50% plus one vote. 57% of people in Ohio. That means a number of Republicans showed up to vote in the middle of August to say, no, you're not going to change the rules like this, and you're not going to endorse what the Supreme Court did last summer by taking women's rights away from them. 57% in favor of not changing the law and therefore supporting abortion being legal, which will be officially decided at the November election. 57% for that, 43% in favor of the Christian right cuckoo campaign that still exists so that the government controls the reproductive rights of women. 57 to 43, that's a 14% difference. 14% landslide in favor of women, in favor of science, in favor of democracy, in a state known as Ohio. O-H-I-O. O-H-I-O. Wow. There's your good news for the week, my friends. And that's what the Republicans have in front of them for next year's presidential election. And this is why I will keep saying that if we do our work, and if we get out the vote, and if we show up ourselves, they are not going to be in charge. They're not going to get the White House back. And we're going to get the House back in our hands. And we're going to keep the Senate. And we're going to start doing the things that we should be doing. And the Democrats are going to have to do what the people want them to do. Not be a bunch of namby-pamby, well, I don't know, we don't want to upset too many people. Yeah, well, we're upset. We, the people, have been upset. We're the majority who believe in women's rights, the majority who believe we don't have enough gun control laws, the majority who believe that the extinction crisis that we're in the middle of on this planet is real. We are the majority. Go down any one of the issues, the majority agree with me and you and people listening to this. And if you don't agree with me or you, then get on board. History is happening right now. And this is some heavy stuff, my friends. But if we do our job,
If we get the right candidates running, and we get out the vote, the bad guys are not going to be running the show any longer. And we have one sign after another showing us that the people are voting on our side. I mean, when you think about this, over the last year since the Supreme Court got rid of Roe v. Wade, states like Kentucky, Montana, Michigan, and others have voted in favor of abortion being legal. You should be buoyed by this. The American people have changed. Or more likely, each year, 4 million 17-year-olds turn 18. And the younger generation, they don't go for this shit anymore. Punking on people and their rights, taking the rights away, all of that. No, we've raised a couple of generations of young people that know what's what when it comes to this planet, when it comes to bigotry and misogyny and white supremacy and everything else. And these kids, 4 million every year, 4 million 17-year-olds turn 18. And about another 4 million, sadly, of elderly people pass away. The largest demographic for the Republican Party, over 65 years old. And we want them to live as long as possible. Don't hear me wrong here. But I'm just stating what the demographic facts are. You think about this. Since Obama was elected by a record turnout of young people, you know, again, I'll just give you this fact. Obama only won one white demographic, only one group of white people, and that was young white people, 18 to 35. He won it with a huge majority, and that put him over the top. Young people. And since 2008, you've heard me say this before, 2008 was what, 15 years ago? So that's 4 million new voters every year that turn 18. And so 4 times 50, that is 60 million young people that have become voters. Now, yes, all of them don't vote. Most Americans, a lot of elections, don't vote at all. And yes, historically, young people vote at a lesser rate. But that has been changing every election since Obama's election. It gets better and better and better, and more and more and more young people show up to vote. There are 60 million in just 15 years. So in other words, they're all between the ages of 18 and 33. 60 million came of voting age in this time period. And you can see what they've done and what they continue to do. And the only way the Republicans can win is through gerrymandering, through racism, through trying to stifle the vote, oppress the vote, suppress it. That's the only way now they can pull off some of the few victories they get to have now. They know their days are numbered. They know the demographics too. They're not all stupid. They know that sometime in the 2030s or early 2040s, the majority of this country will not be white. Just think about that. I mean, already there's a number of states that are not white majority states, starting with, of all places, Texas. Texas. 60% of Texas is not white. 60%. That means 60% of Texas is Hispanic, Black, Native American, Asian. That's the majority of Texas now. 40%, just 40% of Texas is white. And there are similar stories and demographics that have already happened in California, New Mexico, Hawaii.
I think we have about a half a dozen states now that are considered the not white majority states. And every year it seems like another state or two gets added to that. And that's the way it's going to be. And they know the only way the party of white people, the white privilege, white supremacy party, they still call themselves Republicans. It's the only way they can win. Redraw the maps, gerrymander the vote. And if that's really all you've got in your bag of tricks, it's not going to last. So, very hopeful news from Ohio this week. What seems to be, what we're told, is a deep red state. But you know, if the Democrats got busy and if they really ran the right candidates, recruited the right people that are going to fight for the people, they'd win more elections. Stop sending me emails telling me I've got to give $10 by midnight tonight. Oh, man, when does this stop? These, you know what I'm talking about, right? The candidates' emails, Democrats, telling us how they're going to lose, how awful it is. The polls show the Republicans way ahead. Why are they trying to instill this kind of fear? Well, I know why. They want to raise money, because we have an election system based on having to raise tens of millions of dollars. We need to vote for people that are going to change that, going to end that system. And a system where 50 votes plus one is the majority. All right. I'm going to wrap it up here. I just wanted to just point out a couple of other things here. I didn't get to Hunter Biden. I can't believe this is still in the news. And another awful week for the Biden family here. But we'll talk about that next week. We're all sitting on pins and needles waiting to see what the district attorney is going to do in Fulton County, Georgia this week. Doesn't look good for Trump. I'll say that. So the fourth indictment coming up. Get ready, Donald. What is your strategy here? I wrote a Substack about this last week. If you have a chance to read it, if you haven't read it, I'll put a link here to it. And finally, I'm going to write something about this at some point here, but one of the best films I've seen in the last number of years is Barbie. I know, folks, some of you have not seen it yet. You're thinking this is some movie about a doll. It is not a movie about a doll. This is one of the funniest, one of the best satires I think has ever been made. And I'm certain you'll agree, if you go see this movie, what this movie has to say about us, our society, about capitalism, about fascism, about corporate America, and yes, the patriarchy. You know why it's still a patriarchy, though? Sorry, guys, I got to talk to you for just a few minutes here. Mike, why are you talking about this? Because it's still a patriarchy. It's gender apartheid. The majority gender women, who are 51 or 52% of the population, have a minority of the power. They don't hold a majority of the power. 29% of Congress are women. 71% are men. Men make up 48 or 49% of the population. We're the minority gender. When the minority controls the majority, what do we call it, folks? What do you call a country where the minority race is in charge of the majority race, calls all the shots, owns all the wealth, holds the vast majority of seats when they shouldn't? It's called apartheid. And this is gender apartheid. And yes, it took a movie using a bunch of dolls to tell this story. A story that we're still struggling with. A story where 14 months ago, a male-dominated Supreme Court said they would now, from now on, be in charge of what women can do with their bodies. And until we fix that, my friends, it's so fundamental, isn't it? Go see this movie. So I swear to God, just if all you need is a great laugh this summer, go for that reason. But you're gonna get hit with so many other bonuses watching this film. And guys, yes, go and take your sons. This film has a great message. Thank you, Greta Gerwig, for co-writing and directing this incredible movie. And I'll have more to say about this here. I don't want to give a lot of spoiler alerts, but I think a lot of you have seen it by now, and the rest of you should try to see it in the next couple of weeks, because I'm gonna spoil it all. Okay, my friends, thank you for listening to me today. Let's not forget about the people of Maui. Let's thank the people of Ohio for what they did this week. And let's get busy. Get busy to get busy, because we've got a hell of a year ahead of us here. I'd like to thank my executive producer, Angela Vargo. She also edits this podcast. She does a gazillion other things too in our little operation. And all of you for listening and being part of this. I'm Michael Moore, and this is Rumble.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. La 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 la, I don't know this song. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things. And then I don't feel so bad.
My apologies, everyone. Thanks. Talk to you next week.